This is the first interview with Mrs. Gertrude Milliken, recorded Wednesday, July 7th, 1976, in her room at the California PEO Retirement Home in Alhambra, California. Afternoon, I'm going to be interviewing Mrs. Gertrude Milliken, who is going to tell me a little bit about her background, her family background, and then go on up through her life through the present day, hopefully by the end of three interviews.
I'll be very happy to tell you about my background. There always is one person in a family that's interested in their forebears, and I happen to be one of the ones. So I've sort of kept all of the records and that sort of thing. And so I can tell you, I can't prove that all of the dates and everything are correct, but I think I can give you a pretty good idea of my family on both sides. I'm a raw Westerner. I was born in Oregon, and so I am a Webfoot. And I'm a pioneer stock, and all the way down my life, I have shown great qualities of the pioneer spirit. I'm willing to try something new, and no matter how difficult it is, I keep on plowing through until either I'm downed or I down it.
What is a Webfoot?
A Webfoot. Well, you see, the Californians, their sign is the bear, and Oregonians are Webfoot because it's a wet. You know, with ducks. Ducks have webbed feet, and so Oregonians are called Webfoot.
Webbed feet.
Webbed people. Anyway, my family came from England, and on my mother's side, they came to the Middle West in Missouri, and then eventually to California during the Gold Rush days. On my father's side, came from Scotland around Newcastle on the Tyne, and came to California around the same time, which was the Gold Rush days. My grandfather, whose name was Robert Pentland, P-E-N-T-L-A-N-D, and if you look on your map in Scotland, you'll see Pentland Firth and Pentland Hills. And there was a Lord Pentland also, so they've named a lot of things using that name. But he came, and he was a farmer. He came around the Horn and brought their furniture, to California before any of the family came. And then his wife and her mother came to California, but they came, and will you believe it, they walked across the Isthmus of Panama and had a donkey carrying their small goods that they had to have. And then when they got to the western side, Pacific side, then they were able to go on up to San Francisco and meet him. Well, in the meantime, their furniture was stored in a warehouse in San Francisco, all these beautiful, beautiful old antiques from England and Scotland, because they had planned on living here forever and brought all of their lovely things. And the warehouse, before they were able to take their things out, the warehouse burned up. And the only thing that we have of all of those lovely things is a sampler, which was made in England, and it was about 1823 it was made, and we have that in the family, but that is all.
Well, Mrs. Milliken, were your grandparents then, if they had the wealth to bring all of their furniture over, were they considered to be maybe upper middle class or upper class?
Well, they were farmers. Most people were agricultural people there, you know, until the Industrial Revolution and so forth. And then, of course, some of them went into different things. But most people in the old days, that would be 150 years ago, were agricultural people. Well, anyway, then they decided that they would leave their furniture before it burned up. They'd leave their furniture in the warehouse until they decided where they were going to do or going to live permanently. So they went up further on the coast and finally landed in Lynn City, which is not too far from Eugene, Oregon. Now, Lynn City at the present time is not on the map because it was washed away, but it is on the Deschutes River. And they lived there for some time and were going to bring their, it was a small place, they were going to bring their furniture and everything up. And then the flood washed it away, so then they went to Portland. The grandfather, who was from Scotland, Pentland, owned the Deschutes Falls on the Deschutes River. Deschutes is D-E-S-C-H-U-T-E-S in Oregon. And he finally sold that for $50,000. And of course, later it was worth millions and brought millions because they used it for power because it was a falls, you see, and they have a power station there. And that same grandfather then, when he went to Portland, he put in the first waterworks in Portland, which was in wooden flumes. Wooden flumes, you see, wooden... like ditches, wooden,
all right,
wooden flumes.
Wooden ditch. I wasn't quite,
that's
I was
right.
thinking, now what is a wooden flume?
Wooden
right.
flume. And he also was had the first grist mill in Oregon, and the grandfather on my mother's side had the first burr mill. Now, the difference between a burr mill and a grist mill, one are two flat stones that rub together, and the other one is a round thing like this that has things sticking out and goes around and rakes off the burrs and everything from the wheat, and the chaff falls down. So they're two different systems of getting the wheat out. And so they were both, of course, farmers. Now, this one that... was on my mother's side, his name was Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S, Seth Hayes. And he was also a farmer. And they came from the Middle West in Missouri, and they were farmers there and came out and spent the most part of the early years in California and Oregon in more or less getting the land ready for agriculture and cutting down trees and developing the land so that it could grow something. Now, he was was a landowner, and he hired other people to go out and dig up the stumps and get the ground tilled and everything like that. And they used to call him Shiftless because he used to always put a book in his pocket. And when everybody else was eating lunch, they, of course, would take their lunch in a sack. And whenever they were eating their lunch, well, he would pull out his book and read. And they said, he's Shiftless. So, and he was a prohibitionist. He believed in prohibition and wouldn't allow the people that worked for him to drink and so forth and so on. And so eventually, some one of his men came up behind him who I think they say he was drunk and stabbed him in the back and killed him because of his feelings for prohibition. So, of course, there were so many things of that that type in the early days because there was so much violence and that sort of thing. Well, anyway, my family on both sides then are pioneers of Oregon, and my father's parents who came from England, the Pentlands, lived in... moved to the Dalles, which is on the locks on the Columbia River. And he was a banker. And my father was born when he was three in this country, in Oregon. The rest of the family came from Scotland, but he was born
He
was a native. And my mother, of course, is a native, and her name was Gertrude, like mine. I'm named after her. And... she lived at Halsey, Oregon, which is near Eugene. And my father and mother were in the early classes of the University of Oregon.
So they,
yes.
they
and
went
it was
all
very un-
the way
yes.
through school.
It was very unusual for a woman to go to college at all.
Extremely
and to go in those days. And they used to call it then, was called Normal School, and then it was the forerunner of the University of Oregon, which is now at Eugene.
What did your mother do with her education after she graduated?
Well, she didn't do anything. She just was a homebody, raised children, and was intelligent and was interesting and did things like that, but she didn't work.
She didn't work?
No, she didn't work.
My
father was a teacher.
Your father was
a teacher. And then later went into the field of publishing. He was he worked for the Portland Oregonian.
Mm-hmm.
And then came down, the way we happened to be in Los Angeles, he came down to work on the Los Angeles Times in 1909. And it was very interesting what he did.
Yeah, you were born.
I was born in Independence across from Salem, the capital of Oregon.
Okay.
And my father had a newspaper there, which was called the West Side. I was only six when we left there. And I was nine when we came down to California. We went to Eureka. And then from Eureka, we went down to Los Angeles. And he went on the Los Angeles Times.
Could you give me a date? If you were nine, that would make it, what, 1901?
I was born in 1894, November 5th.
It would be 1903.
Yes, 1903.
Okay.
The interesting thing, when he worked for the Times, he was called a feature writer. And they used to send him out to all the small towns, like to San Fernando and to Burbank or to any of the small towns, and he, of course, drove a horse and buggy because there weren't any automobiles at that time. And he used to interview all of the outstanding leaders in the community as to the potential of that city and who were the leaders that had the gumption to really make it grow and prosper and so forth. And he took pictures and so on. I went with him quite a number of times. And those were printed in the Sunday Times as a feature story. So it's very interesting. And to continue on, after many years, and I was married, wanted to get something that tied in with my past, and we were building a new house in Glendale, which was a very interesting story, which I'll tell you later. But I thought it would be nice to tie in with the past, and so I went down to the Times to get something that would tie in with the fact that he had worked on it and that I had been, gone on these trips. And so they gave me a piece of marble, in fact, two pieces of marble that were a part of the counter in the Times building before it was bombed, and then also Mr. Baum, who was the business manager at that time, said, "Mrs. Milliken, you ought to have something nicer than that. Wait just a minute. I have an idea. I'm going to get you something real nice." So he called somebody in, told them to go and get me this certain thing. I couldn't hear what he said. And they came back. He gave me a brass plaque, which was one of two on the original Times building, and this was the one that was the Illustrated Weekly, and I still have that.
Oh, how nice.
I felt real sad because I didn't think they should give it away, but he said, no, he said, you should have that.
So your father must have been a very respected individual in the Los Angeles area.
So anyway, I've seen great changes because, of course, that was way back when Los Angeles was much smaller, and you can't hardly believe how it's grown. Well, anyway, to get back to my forebears, I have always been interested in all kinds of new things, and even when I was in Oregon, when I was a small child, I was always interested in asking questions and nosing around and finding out things that other people perhaps wouldn't be interested in. And it was at that time that when I was in Independence, Oregon, when I was three and four.
Your parents lived in Independence?
My parents, I was born there, you see. My parents lived there, and my father had the newspaper called The West Side.
Side,
yes. And I lived there until I was almost six. And my parents, people would say to my parents, to my mother particularly, "Aren't you worried about Gertrude's voice? I had this huge, great, big, deep voice." And everybody would say, "Aren't you worried about her?" She said, "No, I'm not." And but they thought it was so terribly funny. So during the time that Bryan was running for president against McKinley, some of the, you know, for instance, the groceryman, when we'd go down to get to the grocery store, he'd say, who are you voting for? And I'd say, "McKinley." "Well, aren't you going to shout for him?" "Yes." "Hooray for McKinley." "I can't hear you. Louder." So I'd yell, "Louder, hooray for McKinley."
Yay.
And they thought that was so funny. So one day I made a mistake and said, "Hurrah for McBrien." And they thought that was the funniest thing ever. So they were always trying to get me to do that again. But I was real disgusted because I didn't think that was very nice for me to say that. Well, anyway, when I was 4 years old, the teachers in the school wanted me to come to what they used to call, instead of kindergarten, they called it chart class.
Chart
class. And so they asked me, asked my mother if they would let me come and lead the singing, because I had this big voice.
Now, were you the oldest in your family?
No, I wasn't the oldest. We had four children. I was next to the youngest.
You were next to
the youngest.
We had
a boy and a girl and a boy and a girl and a boy, and I was the girl next to the youngest.
So, and your older brother and sister were in school at this time?
Yes, they were in school. Uh-huh. And so I went to the chart class, and I, with my big voice, I led the singing. So anyway, there were lots of very interesting stories that they told about me, which all I can do is remember them because they told them. But they are so very vivid in my mind that I can see myself doing all of these things in Independence. I can see myself swinging in a where they cool the wheels, you know, they had a trough where they cool the wheels, and I used to get in there and sometimes with my best clothes on and swing back and forth. I can see myself doing that because I've heard them tell about it so often. But anyway, I was always doing things that other people wouldn't think of doing, and so they were always wondering what next. Well, anyway...
quite assume that you were maybe mischievous.
Yes, well, I was inquisitive.
Inquisitive, that's
yes,
a much
better
word.
Yes, I was inquisitive. No, I wouldn't say I was mischievous. Now, for instance, there was a girl who had beautiful legs. I can remember that well, her name. Her name was Nellie Blanchard, and this was in Independence, and I was still wasn't quite 6 years old, and she had beautiful legs, and I thought, oh, if I could only have beautiful legs like that. So I got some cloth, and I tore it into strips, and I wrapped around my legs to make them look like hers so that they would be beautiful.
What type of dress did she wear? If this would,
oh, it's just a short dress, just a short
dress.
She was just a girl. I mean,
oh,
she wasn't
a girl.
Woman. She was just a girl.
So she wore the short dress.
Yeah, she wore the short dress. And that's the type of thing I did. Not anything bad about it. It was just unusual. So as I grew older, I still... Even when I was married and so forth, I was always doing things that other people didn't have the courage to do. So I probably got the reputation of being a character.
Well, that's good.
Which didn't bother me. I always like characters. I think they're interesting. Anyway, now, how far are you interested in?
I would like now, maybe now that we have some of your parents and grandparents' history, to start with you, when you were born, and then go up from here. On, you know, how old your older brother and sister were when you were born, what type of relationship you had with them, and talk a little bit about your family life and what you had to do around the house, if you had any chores to do and things like this.
Oh, yes.
What it was like being in Oregon at that particular period of time, and then moving down to Kansas.
All right, I'll tell you then about when I was small in Independence. We had a quarter of a block of land. My father had the newspaper, and then we had a very large yard with flowers and a windmill and a cow and a barn and whatnot. And it was quite in downtown because it was a small town, and so you could do that sort of thing. We had an orchard and all of that. And I used to, this was another one of the strange things I used to do. you know, people always kill their own chickens, and some people would wring their necks, and some people would chop their heads off. And I wanted to chop the chicken's head off one time, and I kept fussing about it, so he finally let me in. I made a mistake and chopped its bill off. And so they never did let me do that anymore. But I used to love to carry the chicken's head around. And my mother was very upset about that, but I would like to carry this chicken head around. I don't know any chicken head around. I don't know why, but then I did like to do that.
How old were you when you did something
like
this?
Well, I was under six. You see, we left there when I was almost six, yes. But anyway, and then the river was there, and it was a branch of the Willamette River, and there was a big trestle went across it. Mm-hmm. And you know, a trestle is for a railroad,
right.
and in between the cross beams, why, it's nothing but air and water. Well, I saw some of the big boys walking across it, so I decided I could do it too. And so I got out there and then got scared and got stuck. So they were always having to hunt me up, and because I was doing unusual, strange things. Now, my brother, his name was Harvey Scott, and he was named after the editor of the Portland Oregonian, whose name was Harvey Scott. And he was about 6 years older than I was. And so when I was about four, you see, he was 10, and he was my older brother, and I thought he was just simply marvelous, so I wanted to be around, trailing him every place he'd go. And he used to get so mad at me, say to my mother, "Keep her home, she makes me sick." They used to tell me that. I didn't remember that part, because I thought he thought I was wonderful. But anyway, they used to get so tired of me following him, and even after we left and went to Eureka, I used to follow him around and want to play boy games and all that sort of thing. So he finally found out the one thing that would get me down was to call me Spindleshanks. Now, Spindleshanks means that you have skinny legs, you know.
Oh.
And so he did that once, and I was just crushed. So anytime he couldn't get rid of me, why, right before all of his boyfriends, he would say, "There goes Spindleshanks." And do you know, that made a complex in my life that took me years to get over. When I was older, people used to tell me what beautiful legs I had, and I thought they were making fun of me because of that complex I'd gotten.
Of your big brother.
Of my big brother.
Well, what about your big sister? Didn't you want to play with her?
My big sister was, she was older than that, and she was 12 years and when he was 10. So, you see, she was mother's helper, and she was a very dependable, quiet person, and so we got along fine. We didn't have any difficulty. It was my brother that always seemed to sort of be bothered by me. For instance, when I was born, he wanted me to be called Eve-Tree. Why, I don't know, but he wanted my name to be Eve-Tree. He didn't want me at all. He wanted me to be a boy, and when I wasn't a boy, he wanted me to be called Eve-Tree. Then after he had me two or three days as a sister, he thought I wasn't so bad, so then he decided that he'd like to have me called Ruby, and I don't know why Ruby particularly, but anyway, then later, why, he said it would be all right. I was named after my mother, and so he thought I was all right then, and so I was named Gertrude. But I've never liked the name Gertie, and all of my life I've resisted that. And when I was 15, a boy called me Gertie, and I slapped him flat. He went right flat on the ground, and nobody ever called me Gertie after that.
I
tell him ahead of time, don't call me Gertie.
How old were you when your younger brother was born?
My younger brother was born, well, let's see, he's about 4 years old, younger than I am.
So he was born in Oregon also?
Yes, he was born in Oregon also, yes. And when we left Independence, we went down on a boat. We were down to Coos Bay in Oregon, and we're bar-bound on a boat for 6 days because of the fog and couldn't get through. And then when we, that was before we came to California, and that we went to Eureka, which is mm-hmm. down northern part of California, before we came to Los Angeles. And we had to pack in on a wagon and go across country, and packed in on a wagon and camp at night to get to where we were going to live.
Like in the old
days? Like in the old days, yes. And at night we'd build a fire. The man who were taking us there, he was a professional, did that, you know, packed your stuff on a big wagon and then took you through. And we would come behind the wagon in a stagecoach, and they put paper on the inside of your coat and things like that to keep you warm. And they would change the driver and the horses, but the passengers stayed on the stage. They kept going, but all the rest of you see.
Oh, everything else changed.
Then at night, they built a fire, and the man's name that packed us in, his name was Mr. Bunyard. I remember that. And he would build a fire, and we would sleep, on the ground around the fire. My father was...
What did you sleep on?
Just on the ground, and put a blanket over you. And if you had any leaves or anything, well, you'd do it that way. And then you'd see these animals' eyes around the fire. You could see them. I can remember that yet very well.
As long as they're friendly animals.
Yes. Well, you didn't really know what they were. But anyway, we got there and got to our new place. And I was going, then I was going into, and my father was on the newspaper then, and we on the new newspaper, we were going to go to school. And I came rushing home after I'd been there one day, and I said to my mother, I have to be assassinated before I can go back to school. And she finally found out that I had to be vaccinated.
Oh,
but I got it wrong, and I thought I had to be assassinated before I go back to school. So
This was for smallpox?
I think so, probably. Probably smallpox. That's what they used to do it for. And then we went down to Los Angeles from there, and I went to... I went 1 year to high school in Eureka. And
oh,
then
so
I went 3 years. Yes.
Years.
And then I was 3 years at Old LA High School in Los Angeles. And then I went to USC in Los Angeles and graduated from there.
What was it like moving as a teenager from a nice, secure little town to big Los Angeles?
Oh, well, of course, it was real exciting. Naturally, you thought it was very exciting.
You didn't miss friends or...
Oh, I suppose so. Eureka's a logging town, you know. Redwood's all around there, and it's a logging town with lots of mills and everything, and sort of a rough place. So, you know, when you were coming to a more sophisticated community in a bigger town, well, you thought it was very exciting.
You thought it was very exciting.
Yeah, you thought it was very exciting. So, and this...
What was it? Could you give me a little background of what it was like to be in high school, social attitudes of a high school young person back then, and
you mean
dating and courting, if that took place in high school or not?
Yes, oh, surely it did, but of course you didn't go out. You had to have a chaperone and that sort of thing if you went out in the evening, or you went any place. Mostly it was group things that you'd go to. You'd have a group party and so forth. You didn't go out by yourself. And, of course, there were no automobiles or anything like that, so you'd take a walk and have an ice cream soda or something like that, so which was very exciting, but very different. And then when you got into high school, of course, you then the last 3 years of high school, when I was at Old LA High School, why, few people had automobiles, but not too many. You usually had to ride the streetcar, and... So you didn't do anything exciting like you did now, but you had class parties and that sort of thing, and they had a lot of shows that you'd be in, like Merchant of Venice and all that, and people would do a lot of that sort of thing, being in plays, mm-hmm. and I was in a lot of that sort of thing, and then we had the Glee Club, and I was in the Glee Club, and we sang, and did things of that kind.
It sounds like you were very active in high school.
Oh, yes. I've always been active. Always. Big, right. Little, ever. And I like to be active, and I've always been interested in things, so I always get mixed up in it. And
Were there very many other girls in high school? And this, you must have graduated from high school around 1910, 1912. 1912. At that time, there were many other girls.
Oh, yes.
Girls
oh, sure. There were lots of girls.
Did Eureka, the number of, for instance, girls in high school in Eureka differ racial-wise to men compared to the Los
Angeles
area? I
wouldn't say so, and not noticeably. I hadn't even thought about it. No, they were, as I say, there were lots of laboring people there, lumber people and so forth, and they... And many of them were not interested in having outsiders come in. They wanted the town to be just like it was with the old families. They had big houses, and they wanted to keep the other people out. So I would say that there probably were lots more men, really, than women there. But it wasn't so different, no.
What was...
It's on a bay, you know, Humboldt Bay.
Right. What was it like moving from Oregon as far as your home life? Did you, as you moved south, move to a different lifestyle, a better home?
Oh, yes.
Than you did when you were...
Surely. Although, of course, we went through two depressions, so your lifestyle went up and down, but it was always on the higher bracket. Yes.
Was your father considered to be, was your family income considered to be a moderate or... You know,
I would say medium.
Medium?
Yes. You see, my family were all college people, and so they were educated, and naturally he was a writer, so he would be educated, and we always had lots of books. And I can remember one thing about him more than anything else was that he always insisted on us using, all of our children using proper grammar, and we would really get chastised if we used the wrong word or anything like that. Oh, that was a sin
that was,
we had
that
to live
been.
Up to the high standard that he set for us.
Did he put his high standards, did you feel any pressure because of his high standards, or did you just automatically...
No, I thought that was pretty nice. I liked the idea of being checked on. And I've always been a good speller and been very conscious of good grammar and writing. I do a lot of writing, too. And I think that stems from what he said a long time ago. And my mother was very intelligent also.
What I'd like to sort of have you tell me is something about the courting that was done at LA High School and if you did any, what it was like.
Well, of course, I think regardless of what kind of a place it is or what age it is, there's always courting, whether you call it courting or whether you call it visiting or what, or socializing. But at LA High School, which was up on the hill, it was one of only two high schools in Los Angeles, and so people came from a very long distance. And so they only saw each other during the time they were at school. And then when they went back home again, their association was usually around their church. And so you had two different lifestyles. Now, LA High School was, as I said, up on the hill where Fremont won his battle. And, of course, it's torn down now, and their buildings, the Board of Education building is up there where LA High School used to be. But behind our high school was a cemetery, and we used to go out when we wanted to have a little visit with our particular boyfriend. We would go out and sit on the gravestones and visit out in the cemetery, and that was very exciting.
That takes the cake, that really does.
And so many of us were very upset when they had to do away with that. As we got older, they had to dig up the cemetery and move it away. But talking about this, I think this is most interesting. After I was married and we were going to build a home, I wanted to tie it in with some of the things from the past, and I did mention about the LA Times building too. Mm-hmm. But I wanted also to get something from my old LA high school. And they at that time were tearing it down to move to the new location, which is out in Los Angeles, out on West Side. Anyway, they put an ad in the paper and said if anybody was interested in getting a brick from the old high school, they'd be very happy to give them a brick. So I called up the Board of Education. I said, I would like to have more than a brick. I would like to have enough bricks to build a barbecue on my new home that we were building. All right, that's fine. So I got a permit from the Board of Education to go down and get some bricks. So I hired a truck and a driver and sent them down with a permit to get the bricks. And when they got down there, the bricks had all been torn down and were in these big piles and so forth to be taken away. And so they gave the man that was there the permit, and he said, these are my bricks, I bought them. And he was an Italian. He said, I bought these bricks, you can't have them. Who gave you that permit? And they said, well, the Board of Education. Well, he's not around here, and I'm not going to give them to you. And they had already loaded a lot of them on their truck, and he made them unload it. And he said if they didn't, he was going to call the police. And so they went to the telephone and called me and says, what do we do? And I said, well, I'll call the Board of Education, the man that gave me the permit, and have him come down and stop them, and you can bring the bricks home. So they said, fine. So they loaded the bricks on back again, and by the time the man gave me the permit got there, the policeman had come, and they had made them unload the thing. They were going to arrest these people, my son and the driver. They were going to arrest them and put them in jail. And so they had to do away with him because he didn't get there in time. So I was so disgusted. And they said, well, he said, well, now you come down and anytime you want. And I said, I can't afford to come down again. It cost me too much. So I said, I'll just come down in my own car and get a few of the bricks. So I did. And when we built this house, which won the National Homes and Gardens Prize for big homes in the whole United States, I put these 13 bricks. 13 is a lucky number, not an unlucky number. I put these 13 handmade bricks in the front of my porch, and very beautiful because they came from LA High School. And a friend of mine came to see, before it was finished, she came to see the house, and she said, do you know what they've done to you? And I said, no. She said, they put some old, dilapidated bricks in your porch. She said, they're awful looking. She said, did you happen to notice it? And I said, well, no, I didn't. And she said, well, you shouldn't let them get by with that. She said, let me show you. So she took me out and showed me my beautiful 13 bricks. And I said, why, those are from old L.A. High School. They're beautiful. I wanted them that way. She says, I still don't like them. And so anyway, they're still there. They're still there in this perfectly beautiful front porch from the old L.A. High School. Now, let's see, how did I ever get off on that? Oh, yes.
We were talking about courting and everything.
Oh, yes, and courting. So, then, when I went to, of course, I did the usual, you know, liked certain people. Even some of them were professors that I thought were just marvelous. And then I went to USC, which was out in near Exposition Park in Los Angeles. And it was there that I met my wonderful husband. And that was quite a romance, but you probably wanted to hear about that next time.
Well, no, I can listen. Well, truly, I can